How can you achieve and maintain business growth? Harvard Business School Executive Education is now accepting applications for a new program, Driving Profitable Growth. Taking place in Boston from October 25th through the 28th, this program focuses on business expansion and organizational growth strategies that can lead your company into the future. Learn more about this three-day program for senior leaders by visiting hbs.me/growth. That's hbs.me/growth.
You are Locked On Lakers, your daily podcast on the Los Angeles Lakers. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team, every day.
Welcome, everybody, to the Locked On Lakers podcast. I am Anthony Irwin. Harrison is yet again not here. He's honestly a slacker. Darius Soriano is joining us for this show. First off, Darius, thanks for joining us, and how are you doing? And then second question, is Harrison Fagan soft?
All right, Anthony Scott.
No, that doesn't work either. we have a nice show planned ahead for everybody, but before we get to that, I want to remind everybody to follow the show on Audio Boom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and today's Fast Break. And then this show, because we have Harris or because we have Darius on the show, we'll also I'll put the link on Forum Blue and Gold as well. That was really nice of Darius to let me do that. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get your $20 rebate on SeatGeek. Today we're going to talk about D'Angelo Russell, and basically it's going to be a pretty wide encompassing conversation about D'Angelo Russell, so look forward to that. One thing we've noticed, or what Darius and I noticed before we started talking live, was how hard it is to define what the Lakers young core might be individually. So we're going to have a conversation as to what that might mean for, you know, the conversation surrounding the Lakers. And then finally, we're going to have some playoff talk, because why not? So let's go ahead and jump into it. Darius, I had basically right when you signed on, I said, I don't know why some people are thinking that D'Angelo Russell is struggling. You know, and I said maybe it's the box score watchers, but your response was pretty statistically solid, right? He's playing pretty well statistically. So where do you think the criticism is coming from?
Yeah, so before we got on, I was saying, well, you know, Russell, from a per game perspective, he's leading the league, or he's leading the team in scoring. He's leading the team in assists. Field goal percentage is not great, but the game against the Nets brought his three-point shooting percentage up to 39%.
I'd be perfectly happy with that.
So there's, you know, he's shooting 45% on two-point field goals, 39% on three-point field goals. There's some things about his game right now that you could say are not going well, but I mean, in the big picture, I think that he's still on track for where he should be. As far as where some of the criticism comes from, I just think that there's still, first of all, I would say that there's high expectations when you get drafted as high as he did. And I think that Lakers fans in general are not sort of used to having high draft picks. And the ones who have been selected high have ended up being Hall of Fame players, right? Mm-hmm. You're looking at Magic Johnson or James Worthy, or even guys like Jerry West and Elgin Baylor, mm-hmm. right? And then we just got through with 20 years of Kobe Bryant, who was not drafted so high, but that memory of what Kobe was and what he meant and how good he was is still fresh in a lot of fans' minds. And I think that fans in general want Russell or Ingram even or Randall to be that next great Laker. And wanting that, you want those things right. You want them right away. And I think going into the draft, even when he was drafted, there's still maybe some residual backlash to, was he the right pick? I think that, you know, maybe not necessarily in terms of Okafor now, right, which was the argument at the time, but maybe in terms of, oh, well, the Lakers could have had Porzingis and yada, 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 right?
There's Booker, whatever, whoever it might
yeah,
be.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Or you – this is a separate conversation, but last year's draft class, Russell's draft class is going to produce me at least an astonishing number of high caliber players. They may not reach the same heights as some of the guys from the other vaunted drafts, right? Like the 84 draft with Jordan and Barkley and Olajuwon and Stockton or the 2004 draft with LeBron and Wade and Bosch, or even, you know, the 96 draft, yeah. Iverson and Kobe and Dirk and Nash and yada and on and on and on. Right. But they're going to produce a bunch of really, really good players. And I think fans want that now. Mm-hmm. They want to see this guy, you know, like, oh, he's going to be Steph Curry. Well, then let's see it. Come on.
Right. The other thing, too, that I think is kind of a factor in this, especially when you're talking about the Lakers drafts, is the Lakers have actually drafted really well down at the bottom or in the middle of the draft. So people kind of think, well, wow, if the Lakers could find Jordan Clarkson at 46, what could a number two pick look like, you know? Or if the Lakers could find Larry Nance Jr., what did they get Nance at? Was he the 32nd? I want to say he was like the 32nd pick.
I think he got picked at 27.
Oh, and then Anthony Brown was, it was reversed. Was 32. Like, whatever, yeah.
Yes,
so
yes.
If you're looking at Larry Nance Jr. at 27, wow, what might the number six or seven pick overall be, right? And that logic is flawed because obviously it's not a direct grade. You know, you don't, it, that's not how it works. Otherwise, you know, whoever was drafted in Manu Ginobili's, you know, draft year would have been far and away the greatest player in the history of a professional sport, right? So and in general, I just think Laker fans are spoiled by success, you know, and it's, I don't even see that as a criticism. It's, I see it more as a blessing that Laker fans have been able to enjoy so much success as they have. And it's just, we see how this group can be successful. And like you said, we know what it'll take for these guys to be successful. Let's just hurry up and speed up the process. Let's simulate a few months of the season and see if we can get to where we want to get to.
Yeah, I also think, too, that even for folks who really believe in Russell, which I'm one of those people, that that you then set a standard for how he can play, and you just want to see that more consistently, mm-hmm. right? I think that most analysis, though, of young players needs to start with the fact that they're young, not mm-hmm. necessarily that they're talented. Mm-hmm. And I think too often we reverse that, right? It's look at all the talent. Let's see it now. Where I think that I'm not sure if people in general give enough value to the steps that typically come with becoming good and the steps you need to take in order to become good on a consistent basis, and that the guys who we look to as people who were good right away and stay good forever, that's why those guys are considered, you know, the top players of all time, mm-hmm. right? Not everyone's going to be Shaq or Tim Duncan or Jabbar or Chamberlain or Magic Johnson or Larry Bird or on and on and on, right? Mm-hmm. Those guys, or LeBron, those guys are the top, you know, 10, 15 players of all time, ever.
Right. they did all right. You know, they did okay.
Yeah, and so if your standard for D'Angelo Russell is he should be one of the top 10 or 15 players ever, well then, congratulations for having unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. You win a prize.
I think expectations, that kind of expectations, hoping that he's going to go down and, you know, amongst the 0.00001% in the history of the NBA is outrageous in and of itself. But when you're talking about expectations for D'Angelo Russell this year, the thought was he's going to be Steph Curry. Luke Walton's coming over from the Warriors. He, you know, we see the playing style would have, you know, we thought made sense. And I'm as guilty of it as anybody, because I honestly did. I connected some of those dots. Now, I didn't anticipate he would actually produce like Steph Curry. I just thought he'd be used at a something of a similar clip as Steph Curry gets used. And what we're learning this year is the Lakers are more interested in spreading the ball out across, you know, an entire roster filled with good creators. Like if you're going to say we want D'Angelo Russell to be, you know, to dominate the ball at all times, well, then that's going to take away to a certain extent from Julius Randle's early success, right? And, you know, one of the things that we talked about, I forget who it was that I had the conversation with, but it was you can't criticize D'Angelo Russell's production so far and how much he's being used, but then also enjoy the level of offensive production the Lakers have been able to produce this year, right? Because those two things don't match up necessarily, because a lot of why the Lakers are producing the way they are right now is because defenses don't necessarily know who's going to have the ball in any given possession. And while that might take away from D'Angelo Russell's counting stats, it's going to make for a tougher team to guard.
Yeah, and so to get back to the point you made originally is I was guilty as well of sort of forecasting this breakout season for D'Angelo Russell. I actually wrote those words at my site, an entire post on D'Angelo Russell is going to have a breakout season. Mm-hmm. And I think what we're seeing so far isn't necessarily that. Mm-hmm. He's playing well on many nights. He's playing good on most nights. And he's had a couple of stinkers, which is basically par for the course for pretty much every player in the entire league. Mm-hmm. To get to the point that you most recently made, though, is we have a post up right now at Four in Blue and Gold. Our guy Reed just wrote it, and he wrote about Luke Walton's offensive philosophy, or at least what we can project his offensive philosophy to be based off the style of play that the Lakers are playing. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly what you mentioned, is that he actually just talked about this in the last couple of days, is that, you know, one of the standards he's trying to reach is that the Lakers make 300 passes a game, and that he wants to move the ball around, and he wants the open player to shoot, and he wants to make sure that everyone is getting involved. And I think that sort of egalitarian approach to offensive basketball is helping to fuel the Lakers' success. I think that players are finding their stride within that. They're figuring out where and when they can be aggressive. And tying this back to D'Angelo Russell, I think Russell still sort of is figuring out for himself how to balance being a passer slash playmaker and a scorer. Mm-hmm. And I've written this multiple times that I think that one of his best gifts as a player is his court vision and his ability to pass. But I think that the foundation for his game is that he is a shot maker and a scorer. And I think balancing that foundation with the gift of passing is something that he's still trying to work out as a player. And I think if he was a small forward, or if he was a power forward, or if he was even a shooting guard, that it might be a different mindset that he's carrying into the game. But he is the point guard. And I think that Luke Walton, and I think Byron Scott, and I think pretty much almost every coach in the league kind of looks at the point guard as the extension of the coach, looks at him as sort of this leader on the floor, and the guy who looks at the players that he's playing with and is kind of leaving it up to him to sort of map out the game a little bit. And Russell is still trying to work through that. And this goes back to my earlier point that, you know, too often we look at a guy and say, look at all that talent. rather than, okay, well, look, he's actually still only 20 years old. And so I think it's just going to be some time. I don't think at this point anyone can really question if the talent is there. I think it's just a matter of putting it together and finding a way to map it out every single game, which is the hardest part about being an NBA player. It really is.
I wonder if... Does this make sense to you then? So D'Angelo Russell might not be having the breakout season, you know, by definition that people might have anticipated, right? But are the Lakers having a breakout season compared to where their expectations were for them this year? And if you're D'Angelo Russell, are you content? So if the answer to that is yes, in my opinion, I would say they kind of sort of are. If the answer to that is yes, then D'Angelo Russell or the people who aren't thrilled with D'Angelo Russell should look at some of the team success and say, well, you know, actually that he's playing a part in this. And while he might not be having the statistical breakout year everybody might have pegged for him, but if he's a large contributor to overall success, then, you know, that should dissuade some people from jumping off a cliff because he's not averaging a double-double every night.
Yeah, I think it's also important, right, to always be putting things in, well, into context. I think there are a sect of fans who would prefer that he be putting up bigger numbers, even if the Lakers as a team weren't necessarily playing as well, right? Mm-hmm. So the Lakers are 7-5. If they were 5-7, but Russell was getting 22 or 23 points a game, they might feel better about the trajectory of the team in the long run, even if Russell, just because, wow, look how well Russell's playing, right? Mm-hmm. I think that, so on some level, I think that that's a double-edged sword and it kind of cuts both ways, right? To me, the other side is, though, is that it's pretty important to remember that he's actually not playing bad.
Yeah.
Right. And so I feel like too often if players are not reaching some level of play that is based off of our expectation, then we can often sort of pivot to, well, if he's not great, he's trash. Right. Like that's sort of like that's a straw man within this conversation. Right. And so I don't want to pin that on a bunch of people as the way that they actually think, but I do think that when people fall short of what we think they can be or where we think they should be, then we knock them down probably more levels than what they deserve to be knocked down. Russell's playing fine, you know, and he's had some big games. He just had a really big game. We'll see how things go on Friday. And then the game after that, and then the game after that. We're 12 games in. There's 70 games left. We're going to get a lot of basketball action from D'Angelo Russell this year, and I think he's going to be quite good.
I completely agree. Now, the next step in the conversation that I wanted to have was trying to figure out... So it's one thing to see hot takes coming from Laker fans, right, or just this portion of the country where... You're watching this on a night-to-night basis, and, you know, we had the conversation that we had about D'Angelo Russell, but I tend to notice the strongest arguments, or I guess hottest arguments, the hottest takes about D'Angelo Russell than just about anybody in his class, you know, in his draft class. It's, we all know Cat, you know, Karl Anthony Towns is going to be really good. Like, that kind of goes without saying. But... Like, Devin Booker has his ups and downs, and yet I don't see the immaturity stuff that you hear with D'Angelo Russell. Now, the Nick Young stuff is probably not going to help in that respect either. But my question is, does him being a Laker and being the pseudo or the de facto face of the Lakers right now, does that just kind of, you know, do the hot takes come with that territory?
I think that there's always going to be a certain level of scrutiny that comes with playing for the Lakers. When you combine that with being as talented as he is and as drafted as high as he is, and the expectations that come with that, and then you add the market on top of that, then sure, I think that that plays a factor. I would also say too that he is in the spotlight. He does play sort of a front-facing position as well. So he has the ball a lot, mm-hmm. and players who have the ball a lot, they get that extra scrutiny, right? So you can go on the internet right now and you can look at what people type about Russell Westbrook, for example, mm-hmm. right? Now, let's go back 6 months or 8 months, right, before he sort of became more of a media darling based off of, you know, the Kevin Durant heel turn. But there's always going to be a certain amount of criticism that comes with players who are point guards and have sort of this dynamic ability. And when you throw in the market with it, yeah, I think that that adds a little bit extra to it. But, you know, when you start to look at the other guys from his draft class, which is something that you brought up, some of this is just like, well, where are you at compared to the expectations? And so does Russell catch some heat? Sure he does. Does Devin Booker get a bunch of love? Yeah, but Devin Booker was drafted 13th,
mm-hmm.
right? You know, Porzingis gets a lot of love because I think one reason why, for example, Porzingis gets a lot of love is that he plays in New York, right? Which is like sort of this bonus too. The same way that we're talking about Russell maybe kind of getting hit with a deficit based off of his market, that can also turn the other direction too. If in 2 years he's playing really well, he's also going to get a ton of All-Star votes, right? Mm-hmm. Because he plays for the Lakers. We're seeing some of that with Porzingis now. But one of the reasons why Porzingis is also loved too is that he was this unknown. Then he gets drafted at number 4. And, you know, they show that picture of the kid crying when he gets drafted. Like, oh, you know, you've got Stephen A. Smith sort of yelling about how this is a terrible decision by Phil Jackson. And yada, 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 yada. Right? And then what's Porzingis do? He comes out and is a unicorn, mm-hmm. right? And so much of this is going to be based off of expectations and what we think a player is going to be, and then whether or not they defy that. And I just think at this point in his career, people expect a lot from Russell. He's giving them some of that, but not all of it. He plays for the Lakers and in Los Angeles, and you kind of got this formula for being, you know, a little bit of a guy who's got a target on. Mm-hmm. Well, on. But honestly, that may matter to some fans, but it doesn't matter to me.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And I don't think it should matter to a lot of people, but to each their own. We don't have to agree on everything.
Oh, man. Well, there goes most of the fun for this show. I do think though the market stuff is impossible to avoid, and look, the Lakers are coming right off are coming on the heels of Kobe Bryant's career, right? And Kobe is one of the most polarizing athletes I think I've ever seen. You know, it's pretty rare to see somebody just kind of say like, yeah, I guess Kobe was okay. You know, it's either Kobe is completely overrated or his fans say that he's, you know, a top three player all time, right? And then there are grades to it where people kind of, I have him in the top 10, and I don't fault anybody for putting him anywhere from, you know, 7 to about 15 or so. But for the most part, a whole bunch of people want to react a certain way to Kobe. And I kind of think, again, it comes down to habits. And people have developed this habit of looking at the Lakers and analyzing the Lakers in a certain way, especially the superstar with the Lakers a certain way. And it just kind of looks like that's the next guy here with D'Angelo Russell, for better or for worse.
Yes, I would agree with pretty much all of that. And I don't want to say that Russell has this divisive game in any way, shape, perform. But I think that, and we were talking some about this earlier, is that one of the things when Russell plays well, or when, or the, or I would say not even necessarily when he plays well, when he has the types of shooting nights that he had against the Nets, then that's sort of an in-your-face way of showing how good that he can be, right? It's like, oh my goodness, five threes in, well, in the first quarter. And when we were talking about like the Steph Curry stuff earlier, like that's what they want, right? It's like the equivalent of, you know, dunking on the 7 foot guy, mm-hmm. right? But doing it from the point guard position. Unless you're Russell Westbrook and get you a guard who can do both, right? but so much of Russell's game, though, is not that in-your-face style beyond the shooting. The passing can be a little bit, but for the most part, the way that he's effective on the court involves so much nuance, right? The way that he snakes the pick and roll, or the way that he puts defenders in jail by putting them on his hip, the way that he flicks pocket passes when guys slip a screen, or the way that he'll whip a cross court pass right into a guy shooting pocket. These are things that if you're a more casual observer of the league, you may not pick up on all those things. That doesn't make you, you know, a lesser fan than someone like me. I watch too much basketball. That's you know, on some levels, a fault of mine, right? I operate from a deficit when it comes to the amount of time that I put into actually watching the game. And so those things mean something to me. They may not mean something to someone else. And I think that some of the way that he's going to be viewed is based off the fact that some of these little things that I appreciate, someone else might not appreciate those. Well, those things. What they do appreciate is, you know, the 27-footer that he hits over someone, or the play that allows him to sort of tap his arm and say he's got ice in his veins, right? The game winner, or the clutch shot, or the highlight pass. Those are things that stand out. And he's not doing those things on a nightly basis. The things that are taking place on a nightly basis are some of these more nuanced things. And if you don't want to appreciate those, that's totally fine. But I do. Mm-hmm. And so when I'm going to praise him, it's going to be from the things that I see. But not everyone is going to be the same.
It's kind of funny. You talk about the nuance that goes into understanding and enjoying. Enjoying isn't the proper word, but understanding what you're watching with D'Angelo Russell, like you said, it takes a level of nuance that comes from watching too much basketball. I think that the same can be said about all the Lakers' young core, right? There, other than maybe Jordan Clarkson, who is capable of the drive to the basket and dunk over somebody, he's the only one who's really capable of that kind of thing, and to a lesser extent, Julius Randle. But you look at, you know, Randle, and you look at Brandon Ingram, you look at D'Angelo Russell, and none of them fit a perfect mold in terms of what you might anticipate with a certain player. But that doesn't necessarily mean that they're any less capable of being legitimate, really good NBA players, right? And it's kind of interesting that the Lakers have kind of collected or pieced together this roster of such players where, I mean, the flip side to this argument is calling them tweeners, but I would look at all of them and say they're versatile, and it requires a different kind of eye to really understand what they're watching or what you're watching with these guys. And it makes for, the Lakers are kind of a blogger hipster team in that sense.
Yeah, I don't want to reiterate the same points too often, but I mean, all of these guys are also really young, right? And I'm going to harp on this a little bit more, but it takes guys time to figure out how they're going to be effective in this league. And then once you do show that you can be effective, teams start to game plan for those things that you do well. And then you have to then figure out,
okay, how do I still be an effective player when teams are actively trying to take away the things that make me effective? Mm-hmm. And when you're a 6, 7, 8 year veteran, or you're 26, 27, 28 years old, and you've got your sort of grown man strength, and mentally you've seen these situations over and over again because you have the reps, you can then start, those things don't faze you as much. But when you're D'Angelo Russell and you're still 20, when you're Julius Randle and you just turned 22, when you're Brandon Ingram and you're still only 19, right? Or did he just turn 20? He might have just turned 20. I'm not even sure.
Who are we talking about?
Ingram.
I think he's still 19.
Okay, so either way, you get my point. That these guys are still just trying to figure it out some. And the stuff that we call nuance or the little things, those are building blocks, right, for their game. And they're going to help sort of form this foundation for how they're going to be successful in the league. But then teams start to try to scheme those things out of you. And the better players will figure that stuff out too. But all of it takes time. And I think part of what we're talking about here is that, excuse me, part of what we're talking about here is that the Lakers are 7-2. They're doing well. And it's great to see the progress that the young guys are making, but success often breeds this want for more. And I think that that's kind of where we're at right now. And that's why what I wrote last night that was at the site today is that this upcoming part of the schedule where the schedule is going to get rough for the Lakers, I almost feel like that's going to be harder on fans than it is going to be on the players. The players are going to continue to play hard. They're going to continue to execute. They're going to continue to be well coached and follow what Luke Walton wants them to do. Some nights they'll win, some nights they'll lose. They're probably going to lose a little bit more than what we've been used to because of the strength of the schedule that they're about to have. And I have a feeling that fans are going to be like, oh man, this team was 7-2 and now they're, 8-12. Mm-hmm. Right? Like what happened? But nothing happened. Right? Like they're still going to continue. They're still on the path to where I think a lot of people are really going to want them to go, but the results may not be there. And that's just going to be because.
Right. And I think also part of this is it's kind of a criticism on the way we evaluate players coming in, right? We want to make a direct comparison with these guys, and that almost never works. I would almost say that I'd be inclined to say it never works, directly.
Well, I would always say, and I was saying this to you offline, but I think that for the most part, comparisons are bad. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like most times the guys that we want to compare players to are players who have name recognition, which probably means that those players were really good, right? And so you talked earlier about the Russell and Curry comps, or you look at Brandon Ingram and people were throwing out the Kevin Durant comps. And I think that those things are unfair for a lot of reasons, but I think one of the most principal reasons that it's unfair is that guys find their own path to success. And most times those paths are not going to be so similar to another player, even if this guy plays the same style. Mm-hmm. Right. And so, yeah, Brandon Ingram, look at him, he's got the same body as Kevin Durant and he can shoot outside and he can really score. But what I feel like what we're really seeing from Brandon Ingram is that he's a bit more of a point forward than Durant was earlier in his year. Now, Durant has sort of developed into this ball handler who can initiate offense as well. But Ingram showing this much earlier in his career than I feel like Durant has. Ingram has this history also of playing point guard. He did some of that in high school. He did some of it at Duke. You look at Curry and Russell, and people look at the, oh, look at the shooting and all that scoring ability and sort of that passing and playmaking feel. But Russell is not – Russell's a much bigger guard. Mm-hmm. He's much more – he's not the sort of quick twitch athlete that Curry is in terms of this lateral and even vertical quickness that Curry shows. And so the things that the Lakers young players do in order to become successful in the league aren't likely to mirror the things that these other players did in order to become successful. And that's why I think that most of the time comparisons are just bad. And I understand why people make them. It's mm-hmm. because it's a very sort of easy way to connect fans who watch the game to this new crop of players who maybe you don't know a lot about, but in the end, it's probably doing everyone a disservice.
It's a service for more of the casual fan, right? Because otherwise, if we take away comps, if we take away player comps, you're kind of looking at, all right, well, he's capable, you know, he has these tangibles, he has these things that, you know, these are intangibles, and you're trying to define this person. And the people who are watching the draft coverage are kind of sitting there with their arms raised, like, I have no idea what this might mean.
Right? Well, like I said, the guys that you compare people to are usually standard bearers in some way, shape, or form, mm-hmm. right? And so it's very easy to say, oh, you know what? Porzingis is kind of like Dirk. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, he kind of is. Right? Russell is sort of like Curry. Well, yeah, like, he kind of is. But, you know, those are surface comparisons. And when you really dive in and dig deep into what's going to make a player good, it's not likely going to be because this guy's just like Steph Curry. You know mm-hmm. why? Because odds are is you're not going to find another player who's just like Steph Curry. Mm-hmm.
I mean, Curry, there's a reason, like, it's so funny to me that people talk about how singular a talent Draymond Green is and how few guys we've seen like Draymond Green. And then now people are getting drafted and it's like, well, he could be a Draymond Green type. And you see the same sentence written about every tweener, you know, 3-4 kind of guy.
Well, like I said, too, I think that in some ways it's also just like, well, you know, this guy is sort of a big forward who can really pass, and he's a really good defensive player. Who does those things well, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's where you start to get into trouble a little bit. So, but along the same lines, I get it. You know, I'm a fan too. Sometimes I don't know much about these young players who I haven't seen too much either in college or play for their professional team yet. And I kind of want to know, like, well, what's this guy good at? And if you're going to say that this guy can really shoot and he's a left-hander and he's kind of got this strong upper body and he can create in the post, so he kind of reminds me of James Harden, mm-hmm. well, then that may give me this sort of base to work with. Now, when I watch the game, I might say, oh, yeah, I kind of see some Harden in him, but I also see a little bit of this guy or a little bit of that guy. And then you start to see more from this individual player who's not like anyone. And that's when guys start to make their own name.
Right. I think where player comps really take a turn for the worst is when people, you know, read and watch the player comps and then get upset when that player isn't that exact player that they're being compared to.
No, right. Sure.
And that's sure. And so long as and you know what, that kind of falls on the viewer more than whoever is actually analyzing the game, the kid or the player as such. But you know, it's like you were talking before we went on here about Magic Johnson's Twitter feed, right? I'll go ahead and I'm going to give you the forum because your Magic Johnson point was one of the better ones I've ever heard.
Yeah, I was just saying that I think, you know, Magic catches a lot of flack. You know, people call him Captain Obvious, and he's not really like, oh, really, Magic? LeBron James is showing that he can be an MVP of the league, you know? Thanks yeah. for that brilliant piece of analysis, right? And people rag on him. But I also think that that Magic sort of is also speaking to the sort of general fans who don't always necessarily have this full picture. And he's saying things that basically these things are true, right? Mm-hmm. And so not everything has to be nuanced. And a lot of times people aren't necessarily even looking for nuance, right? Which is what we were discussing earlier as well. And so when you look at a guy like Magic with his tweets, it's sort of like, okay, well, yes, this is true. Let's just take this at face value and we don't have to mock it, right? Just mm-hmm. because it might be obvious to us, people who spend entirely too much time writing, watching, and talking about basketball.
In our bubbles.
Because he's not necessarily talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I know he's not talking to us.
Yeah. I don't even think there's a mathematic argument that the bloggers or the podcast hosts or whatever, the people who kind of poke fun at Magic are vastly outnumbered by people who kind of listen to what Magic says and says, yeah, you know what? That makes sense. That's a nice recap of the season so far.
Totally. You know, like, oh, when Magic rattles off four players, now, like I said, some of this stuff can get a little bit like, oh, okay, Magic, thanks, right? But, you know, and over the course of the season, he might name 25 players who are capable of winning the MVP. But, you know, when he tells us that Russell Westbrook is really good and he's having, you know, an MVP caliber season, or the same for James Harden, or the same for whoever else, it's not like those things are wrong. I had an interesting exchange with Tom Ziller from SB Nation. Shout out to SB Nation, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I remember asking him something about Magic, and he told me, you know, like I was asking him if he was serious when he said something complimentary to Magic in the response to one of his tweets. And I wasn't sure if he was, you know, mocking him or if he was actually being complimentary. And he said, you know, I look back and would 10-year-old me, I can either be a 10-year-old me is saying, you can either be a jerk to Magic Johnson or you can be nice to him. I'm going to be nice to Magic Johnson. And so that sort of turned it for me. You know, when I was growing up, Magic Johnson was my favorite player. I'm going to be nice to Magic Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Good for Magic. Keep telling me more about the league.
I'm looking forward to the day where Magic Johnson just tweets out the NBA.com players list for potential MVP candidates.
You know?
I'm looking forward to that.
He's just going to read off the top guys in PER.
Exactly. And Hollinger, that would honestly, if I was Hollinger and he started doing that, that would make my life. Like, that would be it. I'd just retire. All right. So, and the point of, you know, talking about the D'Angelo Russell, the point of talking about Magic Johnson's Twitter feed, that is, was to, you know, sometimes it's easy, like when I get comments about the show, talking about how, why am I a hater? Why I haven't bought in? I think one of the comments directly was, I have one foot out the door because I'm getting ready for something bad to happen, right? And, you know, I analyze the team. I don't like to get too high. I'll probably get too low more often than I'll get too high about the Lakers. But yeah, I don't watch the team as a fan or as the fan version of Anthony Irwin used to. And it's easy to forget that. So instead of, I'll try from now on, but when I get comments, you know, how can you cover this team if you don't love the team? I'll instead of rolling my eyes, I'll kind of realize where that might be coming from.
Yeah.
You've had to deal. I mean, like, you've been doing this for longer than I have, right? Like, when was there a time where when you got that criticism or that kind of knock, was there a time where you'd react more to it? Or is it, you know, have you always been more kind of, okay, yeah, I know where that's coming from?
I mean, on some levels, I felt like, oh, you're calling me a hater. I must have made it. You know?
Yeah.
And like I said before, is that not everyone has to watch the game the same way. Some fans love the team, and regardless of how well or how poorly the team is playing, they want you to basically focus on the team, the parts of the team that are good,
mm-hmm.
right? It's sort of like the approach that you take with family, right? So maybe him, in his own mind, this fan who is always saying, like, oh, you should be nice to the Lakers, maybe him himself, he'll allow himself to say, like, oh, you know, that guy's playing like trash tonight.
Mm-hmm.
But don't let someone else say that, right?
Right.
It's like,
oh, yeah, yeah,
you know,
all right.
Like, I can call my brother a jerk, but, you know.
You say one word about my brother.
Right? Like, it's going down right now.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so, I am a fan. I've been a fan my whole life. You know, even if I were to cover the NBA at large, I'd want the Lakers to do well. I'd want them to win games. The thing is, though, is that the type of basketball fan that I am, I'm consistently looking at the game, and if something doesn't line up with what I would think is positive, then I'm gonna call it how I see it. And if someone else doesn't like that, well, then they don't like it. And so,
mm-hmm.
you know,
that's kind of what it comes down to. All right, so we talked, you know, a running theme of the show has been expectations regarding the Lakers, and we talked about with D'Angelo Russell how expectations might have been a little too high for what he might do individually heading into the year. And now in this case, we're dealing with the Lakers, you know, the overall expectations for the Lakers maybe being too low, or they've been proven to be, you know, that people may not have seen the Lakers for what they possibly could have done to this point. And so you're starting to see, because, you know, because the Lakers have played well enough over, you know, an eighth of the season or so, that, you know, the playoff talk is starting to climb in there. I bet if you were to go to just about every Laker blog out there, I'm sure the playoffs have been mentioned at least once. And then if you were to go on national, you know, coverage of the team, you've had people start to wonder, hey, might these guys be capable of that? And now the next 12 games are going to go quite, you know, pretty far in whether or not, you know, that might actually be a reality. But I'm not necessarily so worried about, you know, might the Lakers or could the Lakers make the playoffs, so much as I'm wondering where that conversation comes from. You know, is it just a matter of Laker fans are used to a certain level of success? They might have prepared themselves for the way a season might turn out. And now, you know, that they've seen some positivity with the team, the next logical step is to say, you know, we could talk about postseason. Unless you said before the show that you aren't necessarily interested in talking about it, it's kind of a moot point, especially when you look at the immediate coming schedule. But where do you think this flip is coming from? Because it is a pretty drastic flip.
Yeah, I would say that pretty much every projection, not only in terms of Vegas, but in terms of major news outlets who do such sort of projections, had the Lakers winning anywhere from the low 20s, you know, 22, 23, to at most the high 20s, like 27, 28 wins.
Mm-hmm.
And as it stands now, the Lakers are on pace for nearly double that. And once a team, and so I was listening to a podcast between Zach Lowe and David Thorpe the other day, and they opened up their podcast, and the whole premise of their podcast was sort of like, is this for real, right? And they were basically discussing the fact that, you know, like, okay, we're about 10 games in for most teams. Most teams have played 10 games or so, and we don't know what we'll know at 20 games, but some of the things that we're seeing so far these things are going to end up being real, mm-hmm. right? They did not bring up the Lakers within this conversation, which I was interested to see if that was going to be one of the topics, and it was not. But I think that this is around that time now where the Lakers are 7-5, and there's going to be real questions about are they for real, right? Mm-hmm. Because if they were 2-10, then people would know they were for real. They were for real bad,
mm-hmm.
right? Mm-hmm. And because they're sort of so far outpacing what initial expectations were for them, I think that that brings in this whole other level of dialogue about what they are, what they could be, and we start to wonder if we should be changing what those projections were,
mm-hmm.
right? And sort of looking in the mirror and saying, was I wrong? And I'm not sure if we were wrong or not, right? Like, when I wrote about this next stretch of 12 games, you know, they play the Spurs, they play the Bulls twice, they play the Warriors twice, they play Memphis, they play
the Thunder, they play the Chicago Thunder twice.
Yes, and so
the Jazz, and then the Jazz just lost tonight to Chicago, so Chicago's actually, you know, better than they thought they'd be.
Yes, also the Jazz, I think, were banged up. I'm not sure if George Hill played,
I don't think he did. And
I don't think Derek Favors played, which are two guys who have traditionally given the Lakers problems. George Hill killed the Lakers earlier this year, and Favors has always sort of given Randall problems.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a whole nother podcast. But this is a really tough stretch of games. I wrote on the site that, you know, I think of those 12 games, even though that some of them will come under favorable circumstances, like, you know, they play the Spurs on Friday, the Lakers will have had 2 days of rest. They play in Los Angeles. The Spurs are clearly a better team than the Lakers, but it's not like the Lakers are coming in off of the second night of a back-to-back and they're on the road, right? They're at home and they'll be rested. And so those are pretty ideal circumstances to face the Spurs. And so there will be games like that within this 12-game stretch where, okay, these are pretty good circumstances for the Lakers to play this game. They're going to play one of these games and that team will be coming off of a back-to-back and it'll be at home and yada, yada, yada.
Mm-hmm.
But along the same lines, I think of those 12 games, they play the Pelicans. That may be the only game that the Lakers will be favored. And that game, the Lakers are still on the road.
So that, I think, is the second half of the back-to-back in that one.
And so that may be one out of 12, the next 12 games where the Lakers would technically be favored to win. And we don't even know if that'll be true.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so if the Lakers went 1-11 or 2-10, would it really be a surprise? It might be a surprise based off the fact that they're 7-5 right now. But if you're just looking at it from the context of favored versus not favored and the quality of the opponents that they're facing, it shouldn't necessarily be a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
If they go 2-10 or 3-9, right? And, well, and
it's also funny because if you would have looked at this stretch before the season started, you would have said to yourself, "Yeah, they're almost definitely going 2-10, or if they win any of them, right?" And now all of a sudden, those expectations completely change.
Well, they've already had two road trips. You know, they've been holding serve at home. They've looked like a good team.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they actually are a good team, over these next 12 games, maybe they go 5-7 instead of the 7-5 that they went, or 4-8. And after that stretch, they'll be, if they went 4-8, they'd be 11-15 and through 26 games, which is basically, you know, a little bit more than a quarter of the season. And you might think, like, okay, well, they can make up some of this during a softer part of their schedule, and maybe your projections on them don't change too much. But like I said, they'd still have a bunch of games to play. And I think it's fair to say, no matter how they do over this next stretch, the Lakers are seemingly on the right path. And I think for me, that's what matters more than whether or not they're actually good, which they may be. I kind of tend to believe they are. And so we'll see where things go. But I think we haven't talked about this much tonight, but we've talked about it before on previous podcasts. But I'm just excited about this team. Like, And I don't even think it necessarily has anything to has. I don't think it's tied directly, I should say, to their record. I think that we're seeing growth in players that is meaningful. We're seeing that the head coach they hired was the right hire, and he can really coach.
Mm-hmm.
And those things bode well for the future of this team. And whether or not, and so I don't necessarily care about the immediate future of the next 12 or 15 or 20 games as much as I'm much more concerned about the next, you know, 30 months or 40 months,
mm-hmm.
right? Which are probably going to produce some really good basketball.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of, that puts a good bow on the entire conversation, in that it's easy to get caught up in the immediate. It's easy to get caught up on a random Thursday night where D'Angelo Russell isn't maybe shooting the ball very well, or where Julius Randle has turned the ball over a little bit, or Brandon Ingram, you know, looks lost because he's in his first season, or whatever it might be. And that, in that moment, it's easy to get caught up there and forget that, you know, heading into the year, this year didn't matter nearly as much as the next 5 years might matter, you know. And that's what's been fun about this season, is that in years past, it would be out, you know, the good moments would be completely outnumbered by the bad ones, and there would be such a bleak outlook for this team that you kind of think you're never going to get out of the last, you know, out of the season, or you're never going to reach that point. Whereas right now, it's a lot easier to enjoy the ride when the ride is so much more enjoyable.
You know? Oh, yeah, and I would say, too, that, believe me, I'm still going to be down on some random night when the guys don't play well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm as into the games, which probably speaks to your point as well, is I'm as into the games as I've been in years, and the frustration can sometimes feel good because there was a sense of apathy that was setting in the last couple of years, and it's much better, I feel like, to sort of have this basis of some sort of expectation about how the team is going to play or how the individual players are going to play, and then be surprised that they're exceeding that. And sometimes it feels good just to feel,
mm-hmm.
even if it's going to be bad, like, oh damn, Russell, you know, is 3 for 10 tonight. Like, or what was he thinking with that pass or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. That's the nature of being a fan. And I'm sort of glad to just even get back to that.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I completely agree. I think Drew Garrison has made the point a couple times, and I saw a few people tweet about it after their first loss of the year, where they lose and you're kind of sitting there like, oh, that's right, that's what a loss feels like again. We've been so numb to it over the last couple of years that, yeah, it's like, oh, man, that does suck. Oh, all right, well, I'm looking forward to the next game. Right, and that definitely hasn't been the case. All right, well, this has been a bunch of fun, as always. I do wish this was an audio or a video format so that people could see the hat that you're rocking right now. That's just way cooler than anything I could wear. So I really appreciate you coming on the show. I really appreciate you coming on the show tonight, and I look forward to you coming on the show again. If prediction radio stuff, you know, that's really, really boring. But if you had to look at this next 12 and say to yourself, I'd be okay with this number of wins, where would you set the number at?
Oh, I would probably be okay with like 4 wins.
Yeah, that's where I'm looking.
You know,
as well.
Especially if one or two of them came against like a couple of the high quality opponent,
mm-hmm.
right? And so if they got swept by the Bulls, for example, okay, well, big deal, they got swept by the Bulls. But if they beat the Warriors again, or if they happen to beat the Spurs on Friday, right? If they beat the Pelicans, the Warriors, and the Spurs, and then for some reason are able to beat the Jazz.
Mm-hmm.
I might say, okay, well, that was a nice little stretch, mm-hmm. even if they get swept by the Bulls and and lose like to Hawks a couple of the other teams or the Hawks, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, okay, well, at least I know that they were able to pull out a few wins. But like I said before, one of the things that I'm really just looking forward to is seeing how they compete, seeing if the things that have been working still work to a certain extent, and then going from there, right? And I think I feel fairly confident that we're going to see that, mm-hmm. because I do believe that they're well coached, and I do believe that they have talent, and I do believe that they're good enough to play with these teams in the league. It doesn't mean it's always going to go well, but that's sports,
right? And it's just it's nice to look at the schedule and kind of say, hey, I think they could beat the Hawks. You know, hey, they could probably beat the Bulls. They could split one of two with the Bulls. Like I just did not see that coming this year, and it's a really pleasant surprise. I'm not sitting here surprised that the conversation went as well as it did. Again, thank you very much for joining. Is there anything that you're working on for Foreign Blue and Gold that people should know about?
Not necessarily that I'm working on, but I would say check out the post at the site that Reed wrote about Luke Walton and the offensive philosophy that the team is showing. He did a really good job and sort of did a deep dive the way that he typically does. And so if you're not familiar with Reed, you can follow him at Reed_NBA. You can follow me at Forum Blue Gold. And check out the work at the site. We're trying to do our best.
Absolutely. And then Forum Blue and Gold also has a Patreon that people should also check out as well. Help out the site as best they can. Thanks again, Darius, for coming on. And I look forward to talking to you again soon.
Indeed. We'll do it again soon.
All right, shouts to Irvin Johnson, not the one that you're thinking of right now, the actual Irvin Magic Johnson. Shouts to Magic Johnson. Oh, crap. By the way, you can follow the show on Audioboom, iTunes, Silver Screen and Roll, TuneIn, Stitcher, and for today's Fast Break, and then also for this show on Forum Blue and Gold. Make sure you're using the promo code LOLakers to get your $20 rebate. I'm really, really good at this. We'll talk to everybody later. We'll be right back.
It's fall at JCPenney. Time to refresh your closet. This Thursday through Monday, get Levi's lowest prices of the season on 514 straight fit jeans for guys, $36.99. And select Arizona booties for her for $35.99. Plus, save an additional 50% off clearance prices already reduced by 60 to 80%. And get an extra $10 off with your coupon. Hurry in now. JCPenney. From valid 10-5 to 10-9, Levi's and other brands excluded from coupon. Clearance selections vary by store while supplies last. Savings off regular and original prices. Intermediate markdowns may have been taken. See store or jcp.com for details. Season refers to 9/27 to 10/18.